Omaha Public Radio presents another program from the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce on Noon Forum. We'll hear highlights from the 2014 Chamber of Commerce annual meeting, including the presentation of the Chairman's Award of Excellence, recognizing an individual who has produced exceptional chamber membership sales and retention results, the Headliner of the Year Award, recognizing an individual or organization that has improved the Omaha area by contributing to its national visibility in a positive way, the Volunteer of the Year Award, recognizing individuals who have given beyond expectation in the leadership of important chamber initiatives, and finally, the keynote address, presented this year by special guest speaker Gary Pruitt, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Associated Press. The title of his talk will be Free Press versus National Security, The False Choice. He will talk about the AP's recent response to the secret government seizure of reporter phone records by the Obama Department of Justice, the lessons learned, and the compelling need for vigilance against further abuses of power by the Obama regime. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, February 20th, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is David Brown, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce.
One of the most important aspects of our annual meeting is to review accomplishments of the past year, and it's fitting that the theme of today's meeting is about collaboration, because the success of your chamber is directly tied to an amazing assortment of collaborations supported by hundreds of volunteers and community partners. One of the things that makes our community the envy of many of my peers across the country is the superior level of individual engagement for chamber-related initiatives, certainly, but all across our community as well. People here care. They spend their time, their talents, and their resources focused on making our community a better place. Thank you for all of your support. Together, we've accomplished a lot, and we definitely need to take time to reflect on and celebrate those accomplishments. And now to paraphrase one of our great civic leaders, Peter Kiewit, we can be pleased with accomplishments, but we should never be satisfied. Folks, there is still a lot more to do, and I hope I can count on each and every one of you to continue to engage with us so together we can positively move Omaha forward. I'd like to welcome our special guest here to Omaha, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Associated Press, Gary Pruitt. Gary, we look forward to hearing from you really soon. Let's welcome Gary Omaha style. And please help me thank the Chamber's Board of Directors for their leadership and good governance of the organization. It takes a lot of time and energy from all of our volunteers, but particularly our board members, to make this chamber as effective as you need it to be. So I'd like to have the board members from the 2013 board and the 2014 board who are with us today, please stand so we can thank you for your service. I'd now like to invite our 2014 Chairman of the Board, Steve Saleen, to help with the next portion of our program. So an important part of today's program is to celebrate the extraordinary efforts of others, and we do so today with three special awards. Our first award, the Chairman's Award of Excellence, recognizes a group of folks who have produced exceptional chamber membership sales and renewal results. This year's Chairman Award goes to Mark Grieb, President of AAA Nebraska, and Phil Moyer, Vice President of Sales for First National Bank, who's accepting for the entire President's Club. Folks, please join us on stage as I share why we're recognizing you all today. That includes all the President's Club members who are with us here today. Come on up on stage and be part of the festivities. They all decided not to come. I know I saw some other President's Club members down there. Here they come. Come on, folks. You're never shy. Come on, let's go. So let me explain what this is all about. Mark's extraordinary strategic vision for our membership efforts have resulted in exceptional sales and renewal numbers. Our renewal numbers went up 4 percentage points in 1 year, up to 85%, and Mark has worked hard to develop a secondary source of new sales opportunities for the Chamber as well. And the President's Club is our elite and very unique sales force. It's truly my pleasure to celebrate this dedicated group of volunteers for their tireless work on our behalf. They are an essential extension of our staff, reaching thousands of area businesses to talk about the value of chamber membership. This group of outstanding volunteers you see on the stage today has collectively more than 150 years of experience selling chamber memberships and has produced thousands of new sales and membership renewals for us. I can't stress to you how unusual their commitment to us and the results they produce are in the chamber world. Less than 2% of chambers across the country have a volunteer sales force, and none of them come close to producing the year-after-year results our elite group does. So on behalf of our chamber board and our membership, thank you, Mark and Phil, and the President's Club for all of your contributions to our members and our organization. Congratulations. Okay, go sell. Go. Time to go. And what kind of chamber CEO would I be if I didn't put in a plug for this group? We are always looking for new volunteers to help us with the President's Club. Belonging to the PC can be a great professional development and networking experience. So if you're interested in learning more about this volunteer opportunity for you or for someone on your team, please give me or Diane Poots, our membership director, a call. As you know, we're a membership organization that represents about 3,100 companies and two-thirds of the area's workforce. We use this strength as the collective business voice to advocate on behalf of our members and to foster an overall business climate, competitive business climate. We use this strength to grow the economy, create leaders, improve the community, and grow businesses. One focus of the chamber is building our community. This happens in a variety of ways, from our civic leadership and young professional programming to our branding efforts. We know how important it is to promote a positive image and community brand to attract and retain business and talent. Over the years, it seems that the greatest success in promoting our community's image has been letting others tell our story for us. And we have found that signature events provide an amazing backdrop for people to learn more about and experience Omaha. It's only fitting, then, that our second award, the Headliner of the Year, is presented to an individual or business in recognition of their impact on the positive image of Omaha. This year's Headliner of the Year Award, another great example of collaboration, goes to the 2013 U.S. Senior Open. It was successful due to the extensive planning efforts and the dedication of a couple of thousand volunteers led by two organizations, the U.S. Senior Open and the Omaha Country Club. Patrick Duffy of McCarthy Capital and Mike Kelly, president of the Omaha Country Club, please come forward as we hear more. (clears throat) 2013 was the first time an open golf event was held in the state of Nebraska. This high-profile event exposed Omaha to a new audience of golf enthusiasts in more than 50 countries via ESPN and NBC. And more than 150,000 people experienced the event firsthand, including several thousand first-time visitors to our community. The Chamber, as well as many area companies, used this opportunity to host out-of-town guests. It was a fun venue where we were able to mix both business and pleasure. Congratulations, gentlemen, and thank you for everything you do for this community. So remember, I noted earlier that we can be pleased about our successes but can never be satisfied. This is important because we believe that Omaha is poised on the cusp of something very, very special. We have seen a couple of decades of steady growth. We've seen a metamorphosis in our physical attributes as a city. Our economy is the envy of many places. Our quality of life is often ranked among the best in the nation. We're even the audible of choice for many NFL quarterbacks. As a chamber exec, I should probably just stop right there and say, we've done a great job, it's time to take a vacation, but we know that that wouldn't be the truth because there's still a lot left to do. So for those who have heard me speak before or have heard us talk about things at the chamber, you know that for us, good enough just isn't just good enough. During 2014 and beyond, there's still much work to be done in order for Omaha and this region to be the best that it can be. We have our own challenges to address, while at the same time, our competitors, communities who challenge us for talent and for business, are not resting on their laurels. But the good news is, neither are we. This year, we have launched Prosper Omaha, an aggressive and comprehensive economic development strategy for the region that's based on the premise that in this region, everyone should have a chance at prosperity. Everyone. You've already committed nearly $19 million over the next 5 years on our way to $23 million to fund this effort. And with your help, we will set a faster pace. With your help, we will grow our economy faster. With your help, we will create the dynamic workforce of the future. With your help, we'll grow our population faster. And with your help, we'll be recognized as one of the top 20 regions to live and work and invest in this country. We have set a course of action, working towards achieving a set of aggressive five-year outcomes. We'll measure our progress against our own expectations as well as other aspirational communities. There's no reason that we can't perform at the same high level as our competitors. In fact, I contend that it's in our DNA to ask, why can't we? If any of this intrigues you, look up the details on our website. Call me, call any of our staff. We'll be happy to engage you in this process. We need all of you to help propel this region forward. And now, very appropriately, our last award goes to a volunteer who for years has helped us achieve aggressive goals. The Volunteer of the Year Award is given to a volunteer who has given freely of his or her time and efforts to the Chamber and the business community. And this year's award goes to, much to his chagrin, our own Steve Saleem. As chairman, Steve swore he was going to go into our selection process for award winners now that he is chairman, but he didn't have control to stop this last year. Last year, Steve was instrumental in our efforts to find, develop, and financially support a new group of elected leaders. He used a variety of his talents to help us successfully elect five new members of the Omaha Public School Board, which will make a huge difference as we move down the path of trying to continue to improve the quality of education in this community. In addition to his chamber leadership role, Steve also volunteers with a number of other community organizations, including the Salvation Army, Children's Hospital, and Medical Center, both Creighton and University of Nebraska Law Schools. I didn't think that was allowed. Building Healthy Futures, and Film Streams. Please join me in congratulating Steve for his volunteerism. I'd also like to recognize and especially thank our 2013 Chairman Terry Kroger, BH Media Group President and CEO, for everything he did for us last year and for helping bring Gary Pruitt into town for us. Terry's out of town at a very important event. His daughter is swimming at the Big East Swim Championships these next couple of days, and we got to certainly give him a pass on being there rather than here. But he has, nonetheless, prepared a special video introduction for us of our keynote speaker. So please pay attention to the screens.
Hello, I'm Terry Kroger, publisher of the Omaha World Herald. I'm attending the Big East Swimming Championships today, so I apologize for being unable to be with you. But I am delighted that Gary Pruitt agreed to speak to us, and I'm honored to introduce him. Gary Pruitt is the 13th to serve as the Chief Executive Officer of the Associated Press. Prior to that, he served as President and CEO of the McClatchy Company, the third largest newspaper company in the United States, which owns such familiar titles as the Kansas City Star, the Sacramento Bee, and the Miami Herald. Gary's formal training is as a First Amendment lawyer, but he's also an intense businessman and has set about growing diverse revenue streams for the AP. Beyond his traditional distribution of breaking news to newspapers and broadcasters, the AP is one of the world's foremost providers of video content from its London-based Video Operations Center. Gary was at the center of the recent seizing of AP journalists' telephone records by the federal government and represented both our industry and the general public in exceptional form as he led the protests of the scandalous use of this otherwise private information. Gary is a strong leader, a very smart guy, a good friend, and you may be interested in knowing that he's a dedicated Rolling Stones fan. Please welcome AP's President and CEO, Gary Pruitt, to Omaha.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank Terry Kroger in absentia. It kind of reminds me of that story that I'd heard once of Oliver Wendell Holmes getting called back when he was the Supreme Court Justice, called back to his alma mater, the Harvard Law School, for the unveiling of his portrait. And there was a big gathering, and the portrait was unveiled, and Holmes looked at it, and there was silence. And then Holmes turned and looked at the crowd and said, "Well, it's not me. But it's a damn fine thing that people think it's me." And that's kind of the way I feel about Terry's introduction. It's not me, but it's fine if you think that's me. But I do want to thank him in absentia. And as the father of two daughters, he's made the right call. I'd be at my daughter's swim meet as well. And I also want to congratulate all the award winners today, an illustrious group, and say that I'm honored to speak before one of the greatest and most successful chambers in the country. And so it's a pleasure to be here today, and thank all of you for coming today. I'm not the typical speaker, I think, for a chamber event. I looked last year, and you had a speaker who, ask you to embrace social media and expand your social network. And the year before that, it was identify budding entrepreneurs within your organization, and always some business nugget to take away. I found a business nugget. I'll add it at the end of my speech. But really, what I want to talk about is the business of being a U.S. citizen, about free speech, about national security, and what sets our country apart. And I wanted to give you a ringside seat on the dispute that occurred last year between the Associated Press and our own U.S. Department of Justice, and how that affects you as well. So while the speech may be atypical, I hope it's not a disaster, but it will be your call on that, not mine. I thought before we start, it might be helpful to know something about the Associated Press, because everyone's heard about the Associated Press, but really not very many people know about the Associated Press. It's a different breed of cat. First of all, the Associated Press is old. It's 168 years old. It was founded in 1846. It's older than the state of Nebraska. It was founded by a few New York newspapers who wanted to find a more efficient way to cover the Mexican-American War. Rather than each send their own reporter, they got together and said, let's just send a couple reporters and share their content, and we'll all use their content, and thus started the AP. AP's been in Omaha since 1893. AP leased offices from the Omaha Chamber of Commerce in the building at 16th and Farnham. Three tries. Already a disaster. We paid $40 a month, which seems to me quite a lot for office space in Omaha in 1900. But I'm recouping that rent today with the exorbitant speaking fees that the chamber is paying me. Zero. Also appropriate. The first AP journalist killed covering a news story got killed at the Battle of Little Bighorn covering Custer. And since then, we've had 30 journalists killed in wars covering the news. AP strives to be objective. We don't take editorial positions. We don't want to be liberal. We don't want to be conservative. We want to report the news to the world, the facts. We don't endorse candidates. We don't have columns. We try to wring all opinion out of our stories and cover breaking news accurately and fairly. Original news from the front lines. It was AP that reported on Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. In the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, for the first 24 hours, only AP reported the news. AP broke the news of World War II ending. And most recently, AP has broken a continuing string of stories that question the housekeeping of the country's nuclear arsenal that led the Secretary of Defense and Nebraska native son, Chuck Hagel, to call for a review of that management. AP also has a lot of iconic photos that you would all recognize. I don't want to go through them all, but we could show them. You know, the Marines hoisting the flag at Iwo Jima that became the Marines Memorial is an AP photo. It's not all war and hard news either. Marilyn Monroe having her dress blow up as she stood on a subway grate in New York City is an AP photo, time after time. 51 Pulitzer Prizes at AP. Most recently last year for breaking news photography of the Syrian civil war. AP is a nonprofit organization, a nonprofit. It's a structure that has served us well over the years through a civil war, through a Great Depression, through all kinds of economic and political cycles. No Wall Street pressure, no pressure for a dividend, no pressure to give money to an owner, no perceived or real conflict of interest. So a great structure for a news organization that wants to maintain objectivity. But we're run as a business. We have to be viable. And that can sometimes be difficult in this media transformation we're going through. But we're doing fine. AP's business model is B2B, as they say, business to business. So we don't go, for the most part, directly to consumers. Our only direct-to-consumer product is a mobile news app. And it's a killer mobile news app, by the way. It's the highest-rated news app on the iTunes store, and it's free. And we partner with local media in that. But for the most part, we sell our news to others as a wholesaler, and they take it to the public. We don't go directly to the public. So we sell to newspapers, to radio, to TV broadcasters, to internet companies. We also sell to the government, to academia, to corporations, who all need and want content. And we do it in all formats, text, video, and photos. And over time, our customers have changed. Used to be U.S. newspapers were 100% of our business for decades. Today, they're less than 20% of our business. You know, as we've changed with customers, 36% of our revenue is now international. Our largest customers are now the BBC, Yahoo, Microsoft, Comcast, owning the NBC networks, Disney, owning ABC and ESPN, Fox, Central Chinese Television, and Gannett, one U.S. newspaper company that's as much a TV company as a newspaper. So we've flexed and changed with the media, and we'll continue to do so. And there's no political bent to our customers. It's Fox News, it's MSNBC, it's Al Jazeera. Everyone needs and wants that news. They may take it and do what they want to with it, but they need that raw product from us. AP has thousands of journalists around the world in 110 countries. And we have bureaus where other people don't. We're the only ones with a bureau in Pyongyang, North Korea. I spent 4 days there in the fall. They don't censor our news. They don't review our news. If they did, we wouldn't be there. They restrict access. All countries restrict access. They restrict access even more. But important to get news out of there. And they don't let their own citizens read our news, of course. But the rest of the world gets to see that news. We're in Havana. We're in Tehran. We're in Myanmar. We're in every state capital in the United States. We're the only news organization in all those places. We have offices in Omaha and Lincoln. I just got back from Sochi last week. We have 140 people there covering the Olympics. So AP's in all those places, and important for media organizations to get that news. It's the single most comprehensive news report every day in the world. And each day, over half the world's population comes in contact with AP content in one form or another, photos, text, or video. Now, they often don't know that it's AP. But most video you see from overseas on television networks is AP video. They don't give us credit, but they give us money, which is makes all the difference. So AP isn't the most glamorous news organization in the world. It's not the most well-known. It's not the highest profile. It's certainly not the most profitable. We're a nonprofit. But you could argue it's the most important. It's got the biggest reach. It's got the most journalists. It's got the most comprehensive report, keeping the world informed. In 1907, Mark Twain said, "There are only two forces that carry light to all corners of the globe, only two, the sun in the heavens and the Associated Press down here." We like to believe that's still true. When I became president of AP in 2012, I told our staff worldwide that our mission was to inform the world so that kids growing up today would get the chance to go to school, get the chance to fall in love, and get the chance to be cool. Borrowing from Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World. Because isn't that what we all want to do? Live in that free world? There can be no higher calling. And we felt that mission was threatened last year by our own Department of Justice. And I want to tell you what happened in that circumstance. And to do so, we've got to turn back to May of 2012. May of 2012. So not this past May, but the May before that. AP, through two reporters, two Pulitzer Prize-winning reporters, longtime national security reporters, uncovered quite a scoop. They had discovered that the CIA had foiled an al-Qaeda plot, an al-Qaeda and Yemen affiliate plot, to put an airplane on a plane bound for the United States, a new and sophisticated plane that could pass a bomb that could pass security and blow up midair. And it was to coincide with the one-year anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden. This was a big story. Only AP had it. So we went to the White House and the intelligence agencies for comment. And they said, wow, don't run that story. Don't release that story. That's a national security risk. That's an ongoing operation. Hold the story. And we did. Because we're not in the business of endangering people's lives or threatening national security. So we held the story. And 5 days passed. And after 5 days, both the intelligence agencies and the White House said the national security risk had passed and had been allayed. And so AP was going to release the story. The White House said, we'd like you to hold the story one more day so that we can release it. Now, we felt that wasn't a legitimate reason to hold the story, and we released it. And so we released the story. It was a big story, and we thought it was important on its own merits. We thought, you know, don't the American people need or have a right to know that such an attack was being planned and that their government was able to prevent it? But it also brought into question a statement made by White House spokesman Jay Carney, who 2 weeks earlier had said the following, and I'll quote, "We have no credible information that terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda, are plotting attacks in the U.S. to coincide with the anniversary of bin Laden's death," unquote. But here was AP finding that the CIA had been right in the middle of foiling exactly such a plot to coincide with the first anniversary of bin Laden's killing. And it turns out that the person who was to carry the bomb was a double agent working for the CIA, the Saudis, and the British. So the story received wide attention, and this was during a presidential election year in 2012. So many Republicans thought, some Republicans in Congress accused the administration of leaking the story to the Associated Press to make the administration look good, and they called for an investigation. And an investigation was undertaken. The Justice Department announced that they were launching a leak investigation and put a U.S. attorney in charge of it. That was the last we heard for a year. Then May of 2013, we receive an email from the Justice Department that they were required to send to us by law, informing us that months before, they had secretly seized the phone records of 21 AP phone lines over a 40-day period around the time that story was released. Thousands of phone calls, incoming and outgoing, and text messages. And now I want to say, you know, like I told you, AP doesn't have a political position, doesn't take political positions, and we have no political dog in this fight. We do not question the government's right to conduct investigations to find out who leaked classified information. The government has that right. And I will tell you, this administration has prosecuted leakers like no other administration in U.S. history. But the Justice Department has rules about how those subpoenas are to be carried out when they target the media. Those rules date back to the Watergate era, and they require that demands from the media be as narrowly drawn as possible, that's what the law says, so as not to tread on the First Amendment material. And they require the news organization to be notified if they're going to take our phone records and text records, unless doing so would substantially impair the integrity of the investigation. So in the sweep of AP records, we feel the Justice Department's leadership violated its own rules. Now, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, recused himself in our case because some people thought he might be the source. So he recused himself, but he still had opinions about it. But we felt they violated their own rules. First, that subpoena was not focused as narrowly as possible. It was overbroad. The phone records they sought were not just the work cell phones and home phones of the reporters and editors who worked on the story, who they knew. It included the general AP numbers in New York, where we're based, Washington, D.C., where we have a huge bureau, Hartford, Connecticut, and the AP's main phone numbers at the House of Representatives Press Gallery. Incoming and outgoing calls, over 100 journalists had used those phones, working on hundreds of different news stories. So it wasn't a surgical strike. It was this big sweep. It was sloppy. Some of those phones hadn't been used in 7 years. And most of the journalists had nothing to do with the article they were looking for the source of. So I know this seizure of records may seem minor compared to what we've heard the NSA has swept up, right? The National Security Agency has phone records for the entire country. In fact, we believe for the entire world. And but this case is different with AP because this wasn't gathering up metadata and just putting it into a database and looking for connections. This was gathering our phone records and text records and having U.S. attorneys pore over it, looking for sources of particular stories and having them review material used in stories for hundreds of different stories with hundreds of different journalists. And in doing so, accessing that news-gathering information that the First Amendment precisely prohibits that type of intrusion. So the second way that the Justice Department violated its own rules was they didn't give us notice. They didn't tell us about it. Now, they said it fell within the exception, that they didn't need to tell us about it because if they notified us, it would substantially impair their investigation. But how could that be true? We didn't even have those phone records. Our phone service provider had them. We couldn't tamper with those records. They could get them. Well, the Justice Department claimed that if they told us, it could have tipped off the leaker of the investigation. But the leaker certainly knew of this investigation. It was publicly announced by the head of the FBI, Robert Mueller, 9 days after the story ran. It was front page news. That leaker knew that investigation was going on. He or she knew he or she would be a target of that investigation. You know, if that kind of reasoning holds up, that would apply in every case there's a public investigation. They would never give the media notice. So had the Justice Department come to us in advance and say, look, we're looking for this leaker, and we want to get this, and we have this subpoena, it might have been narrowed. We might have reached an agreement, but we might not have. And if we hadn't, it would have gone to court, and the judiciary would have decided. And that's the way the system in the United States works. Instead, we never got that opportunity. The Justice Department acted as judge, jury, and executioner in secret. And they may well have been acting in good faith, and I think they were. I give them the benefit of the doubt. I met with them. I think they were acting in good faith. But I think the prosecutors got so single-mindedly focused on the prosecution that they overlooked other things, like the U.S. Constitution. And the First Amendment implications of what they were doing. So the outrage of what the DOJ did was swift and loud and widespread. And the Department of Justice was surprised, I think. And I was surprised, too. I found out when I was traveling on business in South America, and I found out about the subpoena, and I thought, well, this will be newsworthy. I think it'll be newsworthy. Well, it ended up being far bigger news than I thought. It ended up being front page news because it kind of fit with what was going on then. There were the three scandals, if you recall, last spring. There were the IRS scandal about whether the IRS was targeting Tea Party organizations. There was the Benghazi scandal about what happened about the killing of our ambassador in Benghazi, Libya. And then there was the DOJ-AP phone record scandal. So it got traction as kind of the third scandal. I had to fly back from South America to appear on Face the Nation. And the media weighed in as well. And both Republicans and Democrats in Congress weighed in and waved the banner of the First Amendment at the White House. It was one of the only things that Republicans and Democrats agreed on in Congress all of last year. And we really appreciated the bipartisan support. But we had to decide what to do. You know, they already had our phone records. There's nothing we could do about that. Can't unring that bell. They've already got them. They've already used them. What do we do? Well, we wanted to make sure they didn't misuse them, and we wanted to make sure that it never happened again. And so they did reassure us that they were being walled off just for this use and weren't going to be and not accessible for any other purpose, and we appreciated that. We appreciated those assurances from Justice. But we wanted to make sure it didn't happen again. So We called for the guidelines to be strengthened and updated, and for the administration to take steps to make sure that journalists are protected. And because we thought, you know, if you can interpret these rules to do this to us, we've got to change the rules. And so to the credit of the White House, President Obama asked the Justice Department to review the rules and come back with recommendations by July the 12th, 2 months later, less than 2 months later. And the Attorney General convened journalists and lawyers and other experts to produce comprehensive revisions in the guidelines, and they achieved almost everything that AP asked for, and called for legislation to achieve what they couldn't do in the rules. And I got to say, I was the Justice Department's chief critic. And so it's important for me then also to give credit where credit is due. And they did have recommendations and revisions in these guidelines that I think were substantial improvements, and the president did endorse them. Now, we think if these record, if these rules had been in place at the time, they couldn't have done to us what they did. And we think that it's a big improvement. They have to give notice to the media, except under the rarest of circumstances, which allows the media to go to court. And they provided significant procedural safeguards, and they updated the rules so it would include email and text messages, which weren't even contemplated when the rules were drafted. They didn't exist. And for the first time, the U.S. government makes clear that it will not prosecute a journalist for doing his or her job. So it's nice to know now that it's not a crime in the United States to commit journalism. And but we are gratified that the Justice Department took our concerns seriously and took these steps. And, you know, usually the law changes very slowly and gradually. In this case, the law changed very quickly with these new rules. And so we're optimistic about this development, but we're going to watch carefully. We're going to make sure that these rules are enforced and implemented the way they were meant to. And they also called for a shield law to protect journalist sources. And 40 states have shield laws to protect journalist information and sources, including Nebraska. And the federal government doesn't. And so, again, this has bipartisan support in Congress, and we hope that it passes. But nonetheless, it happened, right? All this happened. The law got better. That was a silver lining. But the Department of Justice took our phone records secretly. It was one of the most blatant violations of the First Amendment we felt in our history. And its impact went beyond this specific case. So what will happen as a result of this case? First, I almost certainly will get my taxes audited next year. We know that. And I'm ready for that, you know. But very seriously, I think it did have ripple effects. We've heard from our journalists that, you know, you always hear the media talking about the chilling effect, you know, the chilling effect. Well, guess what? It wasn't hypothetical or real. In this case, it happened. Because of this, we had sources that wouldn't talk to us anymore, official sources, unofficial sources. They didn't want their name associated with reporters. They didn't want to get in trouble. They didn't want those phone conversations and those records swept up. I can't hardly blame them. I understand that. But government employees that we once regularly checked with were no longer willing to speak to us by phone, others reluctant to meet in person. And it wasn't just the AP, it wasn't just the Associated Press, because I had journalists at other news organizations tell me personally that the Justice Department actions had intimidated their sources as well, especially those working in the national security area. That's a very sensitive and important area. And always tough. But it was broad. It was broad, and there was a chilling effect that we felt. Now, the government may love that. I suspect they do. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, beware of a government that loves secrecy too much. Because without a free and unfettered press, you only get to hear from the official sources. There's nothing wrong with official sources, but it's not going to be the complete story. You're just going to know what the government wants you to know. And we know what that experiment is like. We know what that's like. That was Pravda in the Soviet Union. That's what you get when you just hear from official sources. You only know what the government wants you to know. And that's not what the framers had in mind when they drafted the First Amendment. You don't need a First Amendment if that's the way you're going to run the country. And that affects all of us. So this example shows us that we're all going to have to keep our guards up. I think attacks on journalism are going to continue, and it will become even more difficult to counter because technology today allows governments to have awesome power to monitor citizens' communications, actions, activities, and location. So the media can act as a partial check on that power of not just governments but other large and powerful institutions. And that technology is not going to go away. That technology is not going to be put back in the bottle. That genie's out. But a free press needs to play a constant and integral role on a check on government overreach. And I'll also tell you that this case resonated beyond the shores of the United States because I traveled around the world and other countries knew all about this. And they supported, media in other countries supported us. And when I was in North Korea, they knew all about the AP case. They knew all about the Department of Justice seizing AP's phone records in North Korea. And the freedom of press enshrined in the U.S. Constitution has been a model and an aspiration for countries around the world, and it should be. But the actions of the Department of Justice last year could not have been more tailor-made for authoritarian regimes, because if they want to suppress their own news media, they could say, look, the United States does it too. And it shouldn't be that way. So a free and independent press is fundamental to a functioning democracy. I know when someone like me says that, you can roll your eyes, because we all know that the media makes a lot of mistakes and has a lot of excesses and does a lot of things wrong and doesn't follow through on stories or can be sloppy or can do this. All that's true. All that's true. You know, they say, look, it's the first rough draft of history. That's what gets reported in the media every day. That's true. And some days that draft can be pretty darn rough. I mean, look, thousands of photographs, thousands of text news stories, hundreds of news video every day. And that's just the Associated Press. We're turning that out every single day. Thousands of stories, hundreds of news videos. So, yeah, it can be the first rough draft. But, you know, I'll tell you something. It's all we've got. It's what we've got. And some of it's good and some of it isn't. But you're not going to improve it by putting regulations on it. It's got to be free. That free press is what differentiates democracy from a dictatorship and a free society from tyranny. So I think governments who try to set up the situation where they feel, look, you can either have national security or freedom, national security or a free press. You can't have both. And force people to think they need to choose between them are making a mistake, because ultimately that will weaken a government, not strengthen it. And that's not a real choice. I think that is a false choice. So that was the body of my speech, and I wanted to leave you with one business nugget, which was about keeping your job, which is something I think we could all relate to at one time or another in our lives, or maybe even right now. And it's about also the namesake of your state capital, Abraham Lincoln. So AP covered the Gettysburg Address, and we needed to send a reporter to cover Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And we picked a guy named Joseph Gilbert because he knew shorthand. He was a stenographer, and there was no way to record speeches back then. So you had to take shorthand so you could get it all down. And he was a great stenographer. And on top of that, he had heard Lincoln speak many times. So he knew Lincoln's cadence, style, which very much helps, right? That helps a lot. So he goes. We have photos from the Gettysburg Address. You can see Lincoln there. There's our reporter right up front, ready to go. And Lincoln delivers the Gettysburg Address. Joseph Gilbert is getting every word down until the midway point of the speech, when he becomes so mesmerized by the speech, he stops taking shorthand. Speech ends. He realizes, I don't have the Gettysburg Address. And he knows he's going to get fired, and he's right. And you know what? He should get fired for that. You get sent to cover the president's speaking, you better cover it. And so what to do? What could he do? No other recordings, nothing to do. The speech is, lost to history. He asked President Lincoln for his speech notes. Lincoln gave them to him. And he used those speech notes then to file the AP news story on the Gettysburg Address. We don't know if those speech notes are lost to history or not. There's a controversy on various drafts about where those speech notes are. But the AP story is regarded as the most accurate account in the media of what was delivered at Gettysburg. And so, despite what Lincoln said there, the one mistake Lincoln made in the Gettysburg Address, of course, is he said, "What we say today will not be long remembered." But it was the most famous speech in American history. And there was enormous requests for a final confirmed and fair copy to the White House. And we know from Lincoln's secretary that he consulted the AP story to get the confirmed copy of the Gettysburg Address. And so Joseph Gilbert didn't lose his job. He got to dine out on that story for the rest of his life. But it's a parable and a lesson to all of us, when the chips are down and you may need to be bold and maybe you'll just need to ask Lincoln for those speech notes. So thank you very much, Omaha.
You've been listening to a program from Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce on Noon Forum. We've heard highlights from the 2014 Chamber of Commerce annual meeting, including the presentation of the Chairman's Award of Excellence to Mark Grebe of AAA Nebraska North Dakota and the Greater Omaha Chamber President's Club, the Headliner of the Year Award to the U.S. Senior Open and the Omaha Country Club, and the Volunteer of the Year Award to Stephen Saline, President of Walnut Private Equity Partners and 2014 Greater Omaha Chamber Board Chairman, and the keynote address presented by special guest speaker Gary Pruitt, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Associated Press. The title of his talk was Free Press versus National Security, the False Choice. He talked about the AP's recent response to the secret government seizure of reporter phone records by the Obama Department of Justice, the lessons learned, and the compelling need for vigilance against further abuses of power by the Obama regime. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, February 20th, 2014, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Jane McCain, Special Events Senior Coordinator at the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 300 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.